So, today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6. Chapter 11, The Transcendental Qualities of Vritrasura. And today we discuss text number 21. Aham samadhaya mano yathahina. Sankarshanas tacharanaravinde. Tvadvajjaram holulita gramya pashu. Yatim moner. Yamya pavidha loka. Aham, I, samadhaya, fixing firmly. Manaha, the mind. Yata, just as. Said. Naha, our Sankarshanaha, Lord Sankarshan, Tacharanarvinde, at his lotus feet, Tatvajra, of your thunderbolt, Rama, by the force, Lulita, torn, Gramya, of material attachment. Pashaha, the rope. Gatim, the destination. Munehe, of Narada Muni and other devotees. Yami, I shall achieve. Apavidha, giving up. Lokaha, this material world. Where one desires all kinds of impermanent things. So this is Vritrasura's encouraging Lord Indra to hurl his thunderbolt. By the force of your thunderbolt, I shall be freed of material bondage and shall give up this body and this world of material desires. Fixing my mind upon the lotus feet of Lord Sankarshan, I shall attain the destination of such great sages as Narada Muni, just as Lord Sankarshan has said. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The words Aham Samadhaya Manaha indicate that the most important duty at the time of death is to concentrate one's mind. If one can fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, Vishnu, Sankarshan, or any Vishnu Murti, his life will be successful. To be killed while fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Sankarshan, Vritrasura asked Indra to release his Vajra, or thunderbolt. He was destined to be killed by the thunderbolt given by Lord Vishnu. There was no question of its being baffled. Therefore, Vritrasura requested Indra to release the thunderbolt immediately, as he prepared himself by fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. A devotee is always ready to give up his material body, which is described here as Gramya Pasha, the rope of material attachment. The body is not at all good. It is simply a cause of bondage to the material world. Unfortunately, even though the body is destined for destruction, fools and rascals invest all their faith in the body and are never eager to return home, back to God. Today we complete part two of a two-part of a two-part presentation on culture, the title being Leaders as Cultural Engineers. So here this verse really reveals very clearly the difference in culture, difference in values, assumptions within Vritrasura and Indra. Indra's value was to remain as Indra, the king of heaven, and continue his temporary role as Indra. Vritrasura was actually eager to leave the body, because leaving the body for him would be the freedom from this curse of having a demon's body, and it would be the chance for him to return home and fix the mind on Sankarsan, his favorite deity. We also see in the purport the type of culture that Srila Prabhupada is promoting. He says something quite radical. He says a devotee is always ready to leave his material body, which of course in this case may not apply to every devotee, but of course an advanced devotee is always ready, because he knows it's not a body. He has firm faith that there is life after death. Actually, there is no death, just living the body. And he has faith that Krishna will take him to some destination, which is good for him, because he has faith. But he also saying that people who are unfortunately materialistic, they believe to be the body, and for them the thought of death is extremely terrifying, because for many it's the end of everything, it's the end of their existence. So it's a very frightening proposition. Or they have so many attachments in this world, so many plans, so many possessions or attempts at possessions, that for them leaving the body is extremely difficult. The thought of leaving the body is extremely difficult. And sometimes more they are positioned to enjoy or control this material world, more it's hard to leave the body. We hear how many European leaders who were very powerful in their own countries, they stayed in coma a long time. I believe Tito was in coma a long time. Am I right? Huh?
He was sometimes
within. You didn't go there with a stopwatch. Okay, but I heard it was a long time. Francisco Franco, the dictator of Spain, also remained in coma, because the jiva is so attached to the body, so attached to the power, and perhaps also afraid of what comes next, that it's really hard for them to leave the body. Other people were more peaceful, more very sattvic, or more pious. They don't make a big deal of leaving the body. They just go quite peacefully. But some people are very, very attached. So that's an aspect, we could say, of culture. How do they feel about themselves? How do they feel about their identity? How do they feel about their priorities? Okay, so back to the presentation. Obviously works the same. These are universal principles, either at the time of Vritrasura millions of years ago or now. what we really feel about ourselves, what are our assumptions, what are our deeply held beliefs. And that will shape our values, and our values will shape our activities, our behavior, the artifacts or the visible manifestation of what we do. So yesterday we discussed the sutra number one, whatever you do and whatever you don't do creates culture. Because if you stress something, it makes an impression. If you don't stress something, the reverse is also true. You don't create that priority in the mind of people. So, are you ready for sutra number two, or you want to ask something from yesterday? Sutra number two. Either you manage culture or culture manages you. In other words, you are in a certain temple, in a certain yatra, in a certain community, and there is a certain way of doing things, and there's a certain way of thinking, general, certain set of values, priorities, attitudes. So, as a leader, or as a human being in general, either you manage culture, in other words, either you analyze, is this really what we should be doing? Or is this really the way we should be doing it? Are there other priorities? Are there other way of looking at things? Are there other way of doing things? Or you manage culture, or culture manages you. You'll be more or less like a puppet. That, okay, yeah, we do things in this way, so we continue doing things in that way, because that's the way we do it. And that's always been done like this, and we'll continue doing like this. Now, is the best way? Maybe it is the best way. Maybe it's not the best way. Or maybe it was the best way 20 years ago, and it's not the best way now. Because things change, technology change, people change, and so on. So, Sutra 2 brings this up, that we cannot afford to just accept things as they are, to accept the way things are. We need to analyze them. Again, maybe that's the best way, and they need to be conserved, they need to be perpetuated, they need to be protected. But maybe not. Maybe there are other ways, there are other models. In the business world, there are many examples of very, very successful companies which went bankrupt, closed down, because they couldn't adapt to changing circumstances. For instance, there was this phone, BlackBerry. All of you heard about this BlackBerry, right? How many of you had a BlackBerry? One, two. Do you still have a BlackBerry? No. Mangi, you have a still BlackBerry? No. Okay. Anybody has a BlackBerry? Anybody here knows anybody who has a BlackBerry? Right now? No. So BlackBerry went totally bankrupt. It was the coolest thing in the market, and every businessman had a BlackBerry. But then the technology developed, then this touch screen became prominent, and nobody has a BlackBerry. Probably in the whole Ljubljana, I don't know, maybe an 8-year-old man in his mansarda has got a BlackBerry, that's all. So it just disappeared. And I remember seeing a little video clip, an interview with the CEO of BlackBerry, and the interviewer was saying, oh, how are you doing? And he was really proud. Yeah, we are doing very well, you know. Yeah, and the future looks very bright. Yeah, very good. And then they just went belly up. Another example from business. These are all examples that people study in business administration. Is Blockbusters. I don't know if you had them in Slovenia. Blockbuster was a chain, very, very successful chain of shops. They were renting videotapes. Remember VHS? So they were renting those. And it was very popular. Even with some of the devotees. Some devotees. And they were making a lot of money. And then what happened is that the business model changed. People could get, with the familiarization of the internet, people could get movies directly home. They will get first, you heard about Netflix. Netflix. You have Netflix in Slovenian? Yes. Okay. So Netflix first started sending the CDs directly homes, so that people didn't have to go to the shop. And not only they give you the CD home, but then you can just put it in an envelope that they provide, and you say, you don't have to go pick up from the shop, and you don't have to bring it back to the shop. On top of that, there was no late fees. Because Blockbuster, if you bring it back later, you have to pay. Ironically, in 2001, Netflix asked Blockbuster if they wanted to buy Netflix for a mere $50 million. And Blockbuster refused. Yeah, we're not interested. We have our business model. Then in 2010, Blockbuster went bankrupt. Closes all the shops. It was killed. Completely killed. And now, last time I checked, Netflix is worth about $150 billion. It's the biggest producer of TV shows, movies, and all like that. So, it's an aspect of culture. We do things in a certain way. The world changes around us, and sometimes we get stuck in things which are not productive anymore. Or there may be more productive ways of doing things. Can you read it? So these two men in the office, one is telling to the other, I don't know how it started either. All I know is that it's part of our corporate culture. In other words, they have these funny hats, completely irrational hats, and they're talking about those hats and say, I don't know how it started, you know, but that's part of our corporate culture. So we all wear these funny hats. Okay. So this is Edgar Schein. This is a professor who actually developed this three-level, crystallized this three-level of culture analysis. The only thing of real importance that leaders do is to create and manage culture. If you do not manage culture, it manages you. And you may not even be aware of the extent to which this is happening. Second part is also very significant. So, one, we may not even be aware of how deeply ingrained are some habits, some worldviews, some mental models, because we just believe those, that's the way we are, that's the way we do things, that's what we should do, that's our dharma. So we're not even aware of culture shapes the way we are or the way we do things. Now, how this culture develops? So the beginning and the impact of founders as leaders. Now, these founders is not doesn't mean founder acharyas or anything like that. It's just founder. It could be a company, Henry Ford at Ford. It could be anything. that is a company, an organization, a religion. So you could see that this analysis, which is academic, fits pretty much our ISKCON history as we know it. So there are three sources: beliefs, values, and assumptions of founders, learning experiences of group members, and then new beliefs, values, and assumptions brought by new members. The first is quite clear. Like Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he has certain beliefs, values, assumptions, he has certain message, certain attitude, a certain mission that he had. Then, of course, as he created ISKCON, throughout the next 50 years, then people also learned through different experiences what works, what works less. Like yesterday we were talking about sannyasa. The beginning, we had many people in their 20s who took sannyas. Now, after 40 years, nobody takes sannyas in their 20s. I mean, nobody's given sannyas. Even if somebody really is whatever, super renounced, you don't give him sannyas when he's 20. You just look and say, look kid, come back in 15 years. It's just a different culture. We do things in a different way. I mean, generally all the sannyasi are over 50, some are over 60, some are over 70s. Rarely somebody in their late 40s. Rarely. But it's like right now in ISKCON, it's almost inconceivable for somebody to take sannyasi in their 20s or even in the 30s. How old are you, Ananta Prabhu?
29.
Okay, so. So learning experiences of group members. We saw, and also Srila Prabhupada saw that sannyasa is not really so easy for young men. Then new beliefs, values, and assumptions brought by new members. For instance, the first wave of ISKCON devotees were mostly from the counterculture, were mostly from the hippie or beatnik background. And so that brought a certain way of seeing the world. Brought a certain, again, culture. Sorry if I, it's a 689 time I said the word culture, but that's the topic. So they brought a certain attitude to things. No? This hippie mood of being anti-society or being confrontational to the society, taking risks, craving adventures, and don't being in an antagonistic mood against rules, regulations, laws, legality, what to speak of, accounts, and things like that. Those were considered in the hippie culture as Maya. No, to keep accounts, it's almost like, well, you're Maya, you're counting. So that affected the movement, and in fact it's still affecting our movement. Huh? But then, like for instance, in America, where hippies, they don't exist anymore, practically they don't exist anymore, like Blackberries and Blockbusters, so now, who is joining in America, our movement? Mostly are IT professionals of Indian background, right? Computer programmers, electronic engineers. That's like the type of people that join the movement. Not only in America, in the Middle East, and other places. They have a different vision. They've never been a hippie. They never even dreamed to be a hippie. They have a much more conservative background, you know? Jai. Shishi Panchatattva ki jai. So, because people from Indian background, they have a much more conservative way of seeing life that gave much more importance to the family. I remember once I was in Chennai, I was speaking with a young Indian man who was interested to join. So I asked him, "So why don't you join the temple?" He said, "Well, my elder sister won't give permission." It's like, I was new in India, so I was like, "What, the elder sister won't give permission?" It's like, see, I have an elder sister. She would never even dream to give or not give permission. She would not even think of it. Instead, for this boy, the elder sister does not give me permission, so I cannot join. So for me, it's like, what is he talking about? Okay, so the new wave of ISKCON devotees, member of the congregation, of the community, are very much more conservative, much more career-oriented, much more, we could say, integrated in society, thinking about the future, and so on and so forth. Like that. So the new beliefs, values, and assumptions brought by the new members. For instance, in America, because a lot of people come into ISKCON from Hindu background, they bring certain attitudes. So for them, for instance, often building the temple is the thing to do, right? That's like they have that urge. We need to build a temple. And they put a lot of energy in deity worship. And sometimes the deities, the rituals, they become the most important thing. Not only that, sometimes they bring other interesting things, like all these rituals when you buy a new car, when you buy a new bicycle, when you buy anything, you have to do the puja, you have to break the lemon, you have to do this and that. So these are the types of beliefs, values, and assumptions that new members bring. Because they bring a baggage. And it's not that immediately, as soon as you step in the temple, all your cultural baggage disappear. So the baggage you bring starts influencing the movement. A couple of days ago, we were talking about the type of people we bring. If we bring a lot of people who are simple, uneducated, or their background is just their dropouts and a kind of losers in material life, often you'll have a movement, a yatra, where there is an anti-intellectual attitudes. And if somebody studies, somebody goes to university, or somebody writes books, they think, "Oh, what is that? Because that's their culture. That's where they come from. So they want to bring that into the picture. You have experience of that? Okay. So the impact of founder most important, because he gives the shape to the organization. And again, any founder, here we are analyzing ISKCON, organization do not form spontaneously or accidentally. The process of culture formation is the process of creating a small group. Single person founder as idea. Now, Srila Prabhupada, we could not literally say he had an idea. He had an instruction from his spiritual master to go and preach in the West. But that was the idea, to spread Lord Chaitanya's movement in the West. The founder brings in one or more people and creates core group. They share vision and believe in the risk. So think 26 Second Avenue, small group, small band of recruits, small band of followers. They start believing this Swamiji. He's talking about Krishna, Radha Krishna, he's talking about spiritual world, he's talking about the Maha Mantra, he's talking about Lord Chaitanya. And they believe in the vision. And they share the risk. In other words, they go to Tomping Square Park, some of them dress in dhoti. So they risk ridicule, they risk being ostracized by their old friends, but you know, they believe that this new idea is better. Then a founding group acts in concert, raises money, works space, right? The devotees started selling first this little mimeographed BTGs, collect some money. At the time, at the beginning, it was like 25 cents per back to God. And so some workspace is assured, is bought, is rented, is compressed, was established. Others are brought in and a history is begun. So this is how any company, any group, now you can talk about Jesus and the apostles, you can talk about Muhammad and his first followers, but this is how culture is formed. In fact, you can see in the Islam, they have the Quran, but one very important source of information is what they call the Hadiths. Hadiths is the collection of the sayings of the Prophet. And they, after so many centuries, they still say, Muhammad said. Just like we say, no, Srila Prabhupada said, like that. So, we know the history, now the Jaladuta, Srila Prabhupada in Tompkins Square Park in New York, and the Bowery, and the Matchless Gift. This is the courtyard of the Matchless Gift, 26 Second Avenue. Then the lecturing starts, impresses his first followers. Then first rituals, not the Arctic. They didn't know what this Arctic thing was, so they would call it belts. Swamiji is doing belts. They didn't know what it is. Okay. And then, of course, Tompkins Square Park, breaking the American silence, going out. In fact, this tree is still there, and the city put a plaque saying, Hare Krishna tree. An historical part. It's the first public Harinam in the Western world. And so then some followers, this is Balimardhan and Upendra in Australia. They just went with a pack of BTG, Mridanga, some kartas, and they did the same. They same what the Swamiji did in New York, they were doing in Australia. I'm not sure if this is Melbourne or Sydney. And so people gather. See, the people around, they're a little bit perplexed, but they're a little curious. See, they're not against. There's this boy with the kartas, shaved. He's got in a transformation phase. It's like he's... looks like he's shaved up. I don't know the history, but he looks like he's shaving up. Still has jeans, but it's getting there. Like that. So this is the way we do things. That's the way the founder did things, that now the way we do things, we go under a tree and we chant Hare Krishna. And then, of course, different people bring different ideas, different emotional backgrounds, and of course, not all of them are healthy, not all of them are productive, and so the movement gets some, turbulence, cultural, legal, and so on. And this is just one photo, we could have many of this. Okay, so Sutra 2 is either you manage culture or culture manages you. Any question, comment, experiences, observation, realizations, speculations, we'll take anything. Yes. Can we have a mic?
Hare Krishna. Thank you. So it looks like we need to manage culture.
It looks like.
So
I tend to agree. Plus, it's written there, so.
Okay, so then we see Srila Prabhupada seems to have been able to manage culture to some extent. BlackBerry seems to have failed too, as well as Blockbusters. So how do we manage culture, and in which area, or what is the scope where we manage culture? How far do we manage culture?
I would start by giving an analogy. It's like when you're driving, you just have to keep the eyes on the road, right? You may have a good car and a good highway in front of you. Still, you keep the eyes on the road. You see what's happening around you, and who is overtaking or who is slowing down. Maybe a very familiar road, but maybe there is some work in progress. You have to slow down. Maybe the double lanes become one lane. So in other words, we cannot take for granted. I'm taking this highway to work every day since last 5 years. It must be the same. No, you know, it's not like that. In other words, so I'm not saying that managing culture doesn't mean revolutionizing everything necessarily. That would be passion, restlessness. Obviously, managing culture can be done in the trigunas, because everything can be done in the trigunas. So, sattvaguna means awareness of internal dynamics and external dynamics, and seeing, stopping and say, are these the dynamics we want? The other day, we were discussing, for instance, our policy of enrollment, policy of recruitment. So we take a look, what kind of people are we attracting from, say, Slovenian society? What kind of percentages? How many women? How many men? How many people this age group? How many people this other age group? We're talking with Jaini Tagore Prabhu, our sociologist of religion. Study these things, not to understand the health of a society. I was saying the other day, sometimes you go in a temple, you see old people over 50. You don't see youths, you don't see teenagers, you don't see people in their 20s. Obviously, it's a very unhealthy. Like in China, in some country, in some cities, it's all old women. And it's kind of stuck. It's not all the cities, but quite a few cities. That's the type of people we attract, old women. Now, they're tough, they're dedicated, they have strong faith, but they're all women. It's very hard for them to attract other type of people that they're not old women. So obviously, if you only have old women, you have a problem. Even if you only have old men. I mean, that's just a question of women. So you need to look. You need to look. Sometimes we become a little bit, fatalistic. Huh? This is what Krishna wants. Like yesterday I gave the example. No, who's doing the follow-up? Paramatma. So I guess, well, I don't know if that's the best strategy. And I don't know even if Paramatma agrees with that. You know, do you have a confirmation, some sort of approval? So, first of all, awareness. And when you are aware, then you can say that, like, for instance, you come here, you look around. Is the level of, say, cleanliness, orderliness, what you want? So you don't take it for granted. You look upstairs. You come in the temple, you look upstairs, there is I don't know what it is, a collection of items. And maybe according to the subtle laws of the universe, those items have to be there. And that's the best place for them to be. I don't know. But maybe you have to look at them when you step in and say, okay, is that the best way? Is that we can't find any other place in Slovenia or neighboring countries to store those things? That's all. Take a look. Be aware of what's happening. And sometimes you may say, no, this place doesn't, that those things shouldn't go there. Should go somewhere else. Like, there are very positive things. Like, for instance, the last time I came here, that we were doing the bathrooms, right? Recently you did these bathrooms, right? And they're very nice. They're very modern. They're very, what do you call, normal. Huh? A normal person goes into those bathrooms and feels comfortable. Now, I don't know the bathrooms before. Probably they were not like that, right? So you look at the bathrooms before, you didn't think, no, this is what God wants, you know? Because this is the place of God, everything, it's under the control of God. So, no, you look at the bathroom and say, this place, I don't remember the bathrooms before. Better not. Let me create a trauma. So, you look at those bathrooms and say, this is not the bathrooms we want. We want bathrooms which are modern, a normal person comes and he feels to spend the rest of the afternoon in the bathroom. So that's managing culture. Like I was in a temple, I don't say where because why should I say? In another country, in another continent, in Latin America. And I went there. And the bathroom, first of all, you couldn't close the door. So while you're using the bathroom. And so it's a bit of a anxiety, no? Because you're using the bathroom and you're looking at the thing, you have to hold it with a hand. It's kind of really stress-inducing situation. Not only that, there was the toilet, no toilet seat. And I was thinking, imagine a normal, elegant, sophisticated lady is come and she has to use a toilet without toilet seat. So I, in a humble way, because I'm an extremely humble person, as you know, I spoke with the temple president and said, but what about you put a toilet seat? I mean, like an idea, you know, so it's like, you know, consider. Then the wife of the temple president looked at me and said, like if you were saying something new age or something. She looked at me and said, anyway, we don't have money. And then I checked at Walmart, it was $3. I mean, it's like, if you don't have $3, I mean, it means you're starving to death, you know. It's like, what are you, the Rohingyas from Myanmar? And so it's like, okay. So it's like, it was culture. You can't see that you invite people to the temple. People, sooner or later, they'll have physiological needs. They go there and they will feel uncomfortable. In another place, also in South America, another country, we did this, sometimes we do a tour of the temple with the eye of the guests, right? To see what the guests see. Because we don't see it anymore. We live there, we don't see it anymore. So we went to the bathrooms, and the place was a school before. So the bathrooms are for small children. And so it's like, well, this is a bit anomalous. I mean, people, there are not many dwarfs in this country, so they must feel a little bit, dwarfs will be in ecstasy. But normal people will feel a little bit, out of place like that. So anyway, I'm just saying, first of all, take a look. What's going on? Is this what you want really to be going on? It could be small things. The order of parking lot, or what people see, what the sign says, in what language it says, small thing. Or big things, strategies. What's our strategy for online? People are all with their cell phones. What's our strategy to get in that screen? What we do? And look at the world. Sometimes devotees may feel, oh, I have a Facebook page, I'm super, I'm trailblazing. And people are leaving Facebook. Many people. So, I'm just saying, either you manage culture, or the culture manages you. So, I mean, we could speak so much, but, okay, either sattva guna means you take a look, you're aware of inside, you're aware of outside, I mean inside, outside, you're aware of the people, the type of people you, you recruit a certain type of people. Is that the people really you want to recruit? That's the culture, that's we get this type of people, but is it really the type of people you want to recruit? Maybe yes, maybe not, maybe half-half. Passion, of course, you want to change just because of changing, or you any little trend in society, any little fashion, you throw yourself at this. People do yoga, okay, let's do yoga. You know, sometimes without a very clear strategy. You know, people do yoga, let's do yoga. Yes, no. Who is doing yoga? How well? You know, can we compete? Or can we? You know, so many things like that. Tamas generally means living in the past. Sometime an imaginary past. Past would never exist. And so we live in that past and we live, the good old times. The good old times. And then we want to recreate, we want to stop the Kala Chakra, you know. We want to stay in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s or the 90s, if we join in the 90s. Probably most people of Slovenia, no, maybe not most people, but I don't know. Slovenia looks like maybe half of the people of Slovenia, they were not born when some of you joined, right? When did you join? 95. Okay, so maybe most people were born, but it's a different generation, right? It's a different generation. They think differently, they have a different relation with technology, they have a different relation with life, and so on and so forth. Okay. Okay, does it help? There was two more hands. Two more hands, 5 minutes, and one sutra to go. It's like...
Do sutra and then question.
Huh?
You can do sutra and then question at the end.
Well, because this is on this. Do you mind? Or should we finish and then we take the questions? Okay, we'll finish and then we take the questions. Sutra 3, your assumptions shape your behavior and your behavior shapes your assumptions. Yesterday, who brought it up? You brought it up, no? So it's not only your values, your inner beliefs that shape the behavior. It's also the behavior that shapes the inner assumption. Because it becomes a habit. It's a message. Oh, we do like this. We dress like this. We speak like this. We eat like this. Therefore, this is the way of doing things. And it becomes a deep sense of self. It becomes a deep sense of identity. It becomes our religion. Religion in a deep sense. Of the term. So there are different models. Some models, they say old model, you change the thinking to change behavior, but new model means somebody Shuk's version, something new, but they call it new, change behavior to change the thinking. In other words, you engage people in a different way and people start thinking in a different way. And there are vicious circles and virtuous circles. There are things that become better and better and better, and things that become better and better and better. And we have some examples from Shastra, Bhagavad Gita. Dayato vijayapum sam sangasteshu pajayati sangat sanjati kama kamat krodha vijayati krodha bhavati samaha samaha smriti sri brahmaha smriti brahmasha buddhinasho buddhinasha pranashati. Most of you are familiar with the concept. Contemplating the object of the senses, you become attached, and you become desirous, then you become angry, and then you go down, 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 till you lose yourself. So that's a vicious circle. Okay. Then there are virtuous circles, like Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Adhasha, Do, Tata, Sadhu, Sangho. One has some interest, some spark of curiosity, of faith. Then it goes, associate with the saintly people, and then I start practicing. what the saintly people start chanting, start offering the food, and then it becomes purified, and then it becomes more steady, then it gets a taste, and so on and so forth. Okay? So, this is like a demonstration of the principle. It's not just you change the thinking and then you change the behavior. You change the behavior and then the thinking will follow. In other words, you just come every Sunday to the Sunday program, you start thinking like devotees. And things which before look really weird and exotic, they become normal. It's a process of socialization. Okay, there's a last concept. What you see determines what you do. What you see here is not just a physical seeing with the eye. What you see means the potentialities. What you see that can be done. We could say, what's your vision? Like yesterday morning we were discussing about Gurukul. If we see that it's possible, then maybe you try. Maybe you start the process. Obviously, if you don't see it, you don't see it. It's not part of the, it's not within the perimeter of your vision. It just, you don't see, you never think of it. Obviously, you won't do it. This is just an example. There could be hundreds of examples. So what you see determines what you do. What you do determines what you get, obviously, because if you don't do it, you don't get anything. But if you do, you get something. Like you're studying, you're getting your PhD, right? What you saw the possibility. Maybe I should study. Maybe I should study this path. And so you did. Now, when you do, determine what you get. And then, what you get determines what you see. In other words, when you get to a certain point, whatever that point is, you start from that height, you see differently. You see things that you were not seeing before. When you become a PhD, you would see different possibility. Okay, I could become a professor here, or I could write a book, or maybe I'll go somewhere else, continue study, or something. So, what you get determines what you could see. Okay? So, Sutra 3 is your assumption shapes your behavior shapes your assumptions. Now, it's 9 o'clock. What should we do? Close here, abruptly?
Questions.
So you have 2.
I hope I phrased this correctly. Newcomers who come to the Ayatra, right? They might, if they come 20 years later than some of the founding members, they might have a little bit different core beliefs when they teach, when they get some knowledge from the others. You understand? I'm thinking of the picture with the lotus and the roots, right? So in the roots, it's the same, and the values are the same, but because some beliefs are a little bit different, then maybe in the because some assumptions may be different, if I'm looking at the sutra, then the behavior of the newcomers towards the seniors may sometimes appear contradictory.
The behavior of the newcomers towards the seniors
may appear contradictory.
In what sense? That they contradict the seniors?
It may appear so, but they're just basically, they have a little bit different assumptions in their core beliefs.
Is there a question?
Is that an assumption? And I would like you to comment that. What do you think about that?
Okay, I want to go to that analogy you were talking about.
Yeah.
So, the assumptions, not necessarily they're the same. There could be some very deep difference. But the point is that there is a difference between, say, strategy and etiquette. In other words, seniors in our culture and any civilized culture needs to be respected, right? Because just because they're senior in spiritual life, they have been here decades, they've done so much service, so much sacrifice, they demonstrated that they want to be in the system. So we need to respect them. At the same time, respect doesn't mean blind submission, doesn't mean blind following. So sometimes somebody's senior, whatever that means according to a yatra, because in some yatra 20 years you're senior, in some yatra 20 years you're junior. And so, but we have to consider, and that's very much sutra too, either you manage culture or culture manages you. You may have a very deep respect for a senior devotee who dedicated his life to devotional service, but you may not agree on their strategy, the way they think the movement should go, or even how the temple should go. So it's a delicate balance that you need to keep, no? The standard of etiquette, Vaishnava sadachar, proper behavior, but at the same time we need to see that they have done so many good things, but for the future maybe the way they look at things is not the best way. Does it address that? Like that. Yeah. You wanted to ask something or bring something up? You raise your hand?
And there was one more hand, no? I wanted to ask you. You spoke something about education, if it's all right, yesterday.
Okay.
And there were some attempts, as far as I know, about this higher education in ISKCON. I know in Belgium, in Radesh, and you didn't spoke much about that. We are trying to attract these people with this inclination. What about people brought up in the movement? You were a bit sarcastic about the benefits of an education. I mean, of course, we know that our Acharya said that Bhagavatam, there are quotes, is enough for everything, for economic sociology, for whatever. But still, probably in the core of our hearts, we don't really believe that. We think that we should add some little details of modern sciences to what Bhagavatam is saying.
What is your question?
My question is, this is big project, but I personally think that it's the most important. Should ISKCON have its own higher education? It's completely...
Yes.
It's completely dream world probably, but what do you think about
yes.
these things? And how should it be done?
Okay, so the answer is yes, ISKCON should have its own higher education. In fact, there are steps, there's some plans for Mayapur University, some people already designing the shape of the buildings and things, so it's nothing. I'm not surprised that, and I take full responsibility, but I'm surprised that you perceive that I was sarcastic about education, because it's like, since I came and talked about education.
You were saying like what they are getting, those engineers, and they are pushing so much, and then they...
Maybe you should use the mic.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I search for the word. Okay. I didn't want to criticize you. I share your opinion. I share the cynicism about this, but still, I think it's impossible to be successful in this world without having some kind of a degree. That's my somehow opinion. I mean, there are people who went through Gurukul and they are successful. They are using
what you say. You see, yeah. See, this is a series of presentation. Maybe you miss a few.
No, I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. Be happy. I got your point.
I used a strong word, but I didn't want.
No. See, I can be sarcastic. I don't feel bad that somebody feels I'm sarcastic because. I got your point. Don't be sorry. The point is not that you felt I've been sarcastic, because I am sarcastic by nature. Okay? So, I have been, certainly over these last few days, I have been sarcastic. But certainly, I've not been sarcastic about education. Because, for instance, the other day, three days ago about the college preaching, I spend the whole hour talking about we should go to the college or university and get intelligent people. And that was the plan of Srila Prabhupada, to get intelligent leaders. And yesterday, speaking about Gurukul, I said that obviously our children, if they need to become engineers or they get a degree, they should go out. But it's important that the first years of their education be a full immersion in Krishna consciousness, so that they build the character, the fundamental values and assumption, a personality that they will protect them when they go into the world. So no problem with education, no problem with higher education. We just need to see that it is higher education. It's really higher education. But otherwise, the answer to your main question, should ISKCON develop some higher education? The answer is yes. How to do it? I don't think we have the time right now. These are obviously complex projects, and people are working on that. In India, there is this, for instance, in the Govardhanika village recently, the what's called Bhagavat Vidyapith, something like that. They got connected with one of Mumbai University, so then the degrees that they do in Vaishnava theology and things like that, they are valid, they are accredited outside. So, there's just no problem with that. At least, I don't have a problem with that. The principle is that we need to be respectable in society. It's just like Lord Chaitanya. He was very happy as a Nimai Pandit in Navadvip. He was treated like a king in Navadvip. Prabhu, let me speak. Can you just put down the mic?
I got
your point, and it's enough.
I really have one important.
Don't want any more points from you right now.
Okay.
So, and I'm sorry for that, because I had to juggle so many things.
No.
The message I want to give, the time. So, like Lord Chaitanya didn't have a personal need to take sannyas. He had the perfect grihastha life, very loving mother, fantastic wife. He has students, he had influence. He just stopped the Chankasi edict and so on. So he was really successful in any case. But he felt that for his mission, it was important to take sannyas. And take sannyas at that time means you take the Shankara line, because those were the sannyasis around. So the principle is that you need, if you are a preacher, you need to be in a position to be respected in society. Now, going around with a stick in modern society, in Western society, is not particularly respectable. Just, okay, you are Hare Krishna, now you are a Krishna with a stick. That's all. So maybe internally is different, but externally doesn't really make any difference. There's just a monk, okay, there are many monks, okay, you're another monk, fine. But maybe if you have a title from a respectable university, and if you can speak, you can present things in a certain way, which takes a certain training. Therefore, say if you know Sanskrit, or when you speak also about history or sociology, and then people will take you more seriously. So there's no problem with using anything in Krishna consciousness. So now it's time to finish, right? Yes. So today we are going, my wife and I are very grateful for your, sorry if I don't, you really feel something to say urgently that you really feel will add?
It's connected to the subject, I just...
But you feel really that you will feel bad if I don't let you speak?
It's
yes or no?
I mean,
do you feel bad if I don't let you speak?
No, but it's okay. Important.
So you live here, so you'll have a chance to share another time, okay?
Okay.
And you can tell me after the class.
Yeah.
It's just very late. Now, I was just saying thank you very much for your hospitality, for being so receptive, so hospitable, so ready to open, to discuss this thing and listen. And I wanted to say something that somehow in the all these topics got a little bit put aside, but came up the very evening, the first evening we discussed, the next evening, because first evening was Nishinga Chaturdasi. But this concept of what's success. And frankly, I like this idea of, especially Madan Kishore Prabhu, how focusing on these three broad categories of Namaruchi, Vaishnava Seva, and Jiva Doya. This can be unpacked in thousands of different ways. When you serve the Vaishnava, it can be serve their body, serve their mind, serve the stability, the social situation, the economic situation, the psychological situation, the spiritual situation, and the spiritual ramify into the chanting, to the reading, to the studying, into the engaging. So these are like seeds of many, many, many trees. But I feel those are very... First of all, they are from our tradition. And second, they are very, we could say, all-encompassing. Namaruchi, one's taste for spiritual life in general, not only for the name, but in general for spiritual life, for advancing, for attraction towards the Lord Krishna. And Vaishnava Seva, a spirit of service. Lord Chaitanya said, Prabhu koi Vaishnava seva nama sankirtan dui koro shigra bhave shri Krishna charan. If you do these two things, Vaishnava seva and nama sankirtan, you'll very quickly achieve the lotus feet of Krishna. That's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then, Jiva Doi. We are a preaching movement. We are here because somebody preached to us. Somebody took the risk, took the dangers, did the austerity, to open this temple and to distribute books and so on. So it's a preaching movement. It's to please Lord Chaitanya. They are here to preach. So if we could assist. So it makes a lot of sense as a meditation. So I wish all the best to ISKCON Ljubljana, ISKCON Slovenia. And forgive us, or me in particular, for any offense, mistake, or unnecessary sarcasm. That's entirely possible. Thank you. And Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.